If you're like me, you're an oyster lover. On this week's Louisiana Eats, we'll go behind the scenes to get a better understanding of how those salty bivalves go from the farm to the table. We begin with Toler Noli, founder of the Oyster Company of Virginia.
We're making the hatcheries profitable. We're providing the general public with beautiful, plump oysters that you can now eat year-round and don't have to worry about the R in the month. And on top of that, you can now buy credits with the oysters.
Then we learn how to shuck oysters with 2016 P&J Oyster Shucking Champion, Jay Gallette.
I was really overwhelmed, to be honest with you. I actually felt like crying for the most part. But I knew that if I just did what I do and held it down for New Orleans, I could win first place.
We're getting an oyster education on this week's Louisiana Eats. That's coming up next. But first, the news. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. From WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. If you still believe that oysters should only be eaten during months with an R in them, it's time to catch up with the 21st century. Today, oysters are eaten year-round, made possible through the highest safety standards of governmental food screening and strict regulations regarding refrigeration. This week, we're going to put you in the mood for oysters, not just from Louisiana, but also from Chesapeake Bay. Toler Noli, founder of the Oyster Company of Virginia, fills us in on how he has single-handedly helped restore the population of Chesapeake Bay's indigenous oysters. Then we meet another Virginian, Deborah Pratt, also known as the Black Pearl. Oyster shucking has taken Deborah all over the world to compete in and win shucking competitions. But here in New Orleans, a South Louisiana boy trumped the Black Pearl in this year's P&J Oyster Shucking Competition. We'll get a lesson in shucking from Jay Gallette, the current reigning oyster shucking champion. So let the shucking and the slurping begin on this week's Louisiana Eats. Toler Noli is founder of the Oyster Company of Virginia, which, since August 2010, has been working to mitigate the loss of Chesapeake Bay's indigenous oysters through their aquaculture and oyster cage co-op programs. We sat down with Toler to learn how he came to create these programs and what effects they've had on the industry.
Well, it's a fascinating journey, and it really started when I came back from South Africa and we were rebuilding our cottage that was wiped out by Hurricane Isabel on the Chesapeake Bay. And there was this date in April of 2010 that you all remember pretty significantly down here, Deepwater Horizon. Mm. And it was in our face every day on CNN. And about 3 weeks into it, the Army Corps of Engineers had opened up some floodgates and had sent fresh water to protect some wetlands and killed 60 million oysters to protect those wetlands. And so the question was, well, why didn't they get the watermen to go and actually harvest those oysters as an income instead of just, you know, killing them because they have value? So I actually flew down here and did some research, and through my journey met Sal Cenceri on the phone.
The famous Sal Cenceri P&J Oysters.
You got it. And at that time, it was a 134-year-old oyster company. And Sal goes, Toler, he goes, I don't know what I'm going to be able to do. I may have to shut my shucking house down for the first time in 134 years. I said, Sal, I'm not a waterman, and I've just gotten back into the country, but I'll tell you this. I have heard that Louisiana has been supplying Virginia with oysters for the last 30 years because of the implosion of the seafood industry on the Chesapeake Bay. I said, you all have helped our shucking houses and you've helped our packers. So I'm going to make you a promise. And so I called Taylor Shellfish. I called Patrick McMurray up in Canada. I just started calling these oyster companies. And I said, please send oysters down to P&J Oyster Company. They'll pay for them. But we got to keep them in business because they're going to shut down. That's how that story started. And through that journey, Poppy, I learned that there was this incredible new technology that had been developed in Virginia where they could create what's called a triploid oyster. And the beauty of the triploid oyster is it grows very quick, and that way we can get it to market faster, but it's doing something else. It's actually filtering the waters of the Chesapeake Bay, so it could actually be used as a filtration value. So that's how it got started. There was a group that wanted to bring the Asian oyster into the Chesapeake Bay. And you know, sometimes when we bring non-native species into native areas, you cause more problems like snakehead, kudzu, you name it. So what we said was, wait a minute, let's use this new technology because these triploid oysters, they don't reproduce. Mm-hmm. So they can spend their energy growing. Now, why is that important? It's because for the first time in history, the oyster aquaculture industry can actually help to put oysters in the water and help nature in the natural waters and take the pressure off the native wild oyster, which is less than 1% in the Chesapeake Bay. Then the question became, all right, how do we accelerate? What are the mitigators? Well, you've got a labor force. There are only 3,000 watermen left in the Chesapeake Bay, really about 500 card-carrying watermen. And so you go, okay, well, we've got a labor force. How do we help them transition from hunter-gatherer to aquaculture farmer? Well, you've got this equipment. You've got things called upwellers, and you've got the tailor floats and things called SEPA cages, and you've got these cages that you actually can put into the water. They have legs on them, and they stay off the bottom. And they're designed for a reason, to protect the oyster seeds as they're growing, but it does something even more amazing. And that's that it actually provides for other fish and reef habitat to hide and to grow. So you get little crabs, the krill, you get the other little fish. And so it's like a mini reef. So all of a sudden we're saying, okay, well, if we can accelerate this equipment and give that to the watermen under a co-op, then we'll be able to accelerate the hatcheries and make them profitable, help the watermen transition, and we can create these beautiful oysters that we can bring to market in 1 year instead of waiting 2.5 years to get a 3-inch oyster. And it's not just the meat that you're eating. You've got the shell. And the shell is a wonderful commodity because we found out that over the hundreds of years we've been taking the oyster out of the water, and what were we forgetting to put back?
The shells.
The shells. And the shells are not only for the substrate material for striking additional oysters, but it's also calcium. Calcium is a buffer to acidification. So when you think about the acid rains, or if you believe in climate change, and if you believe that all these things are happening where, you know, you're changing the pH value, well, if 85% of the world's oyster population has been depleted and it's calcium, then don't you think if we put more oysters back in the water that we'll be actually helping to provide balance for the pH? So I looked at this model and I said, okay, if we not only sell these cages to the public and to say, you can underwrite a cage one time, and whether you buy one or you buy 1,000 for $175, we will co-op that cage with the watermen in the Chesapeake Bay and all the different watersheds. And we'll thank you by shipping you 2 dozen fresh-packed Virginia oysters from one of the 7 regions, soon to be 8, once a year for 10 years. And you'll have access to additional oysters at co-op prices. So instead of paying $3.25 an oyster, you're paying right now about 35 cents an oyster.
My goodness.
It's a great way to say thank you, because now the watermen don't have the financial pressure on them. And they can now transition from hunter-gatherer to aquaculture farmer. We're making the hatcheries profitable. We're providing the general public with beautiful, plump oysters that you can now eat year-round and don't have to worry about the R in the month.
Right.
And on top of that, you can now, for the first time in history, buy credits with the oysters. And you're helping to accelerate the value-added proposition that the oyster now provides, not only for eating the oyster, but it's helping to mitigate nitrogen and phosphorus. It's bringing real balance back into the Chesapeake Bay.
And in a delicious way.
You got it.
It's wonderful the way you have incorporated all of this into a community effort. What are the numbers? How many participants do you have today? And what have the results been like?
We have over 2,200 supporters in 44 states throughout the continental U.S. right now. We have investors that have actually invested in 1,000 tranche cages, which we're blown away. We've got like four of those individuals that have bought 1,000 cages each. And with the nutrient credit trading, now we can actually look at accelerating that. So EPA is blessing this as a BMP, which is called a best management practice. But once that's done, we'll really be able to take this model and not only do it for the Chesapeake Bay, but we think we can actually take the same model and go throughout the United States to help, say, Louisiana and the other Gulf areas, and then also these tributaries where now as humans that we understand that we've made an impact on these estuaries and waters, now we have a way to contribute and say, oh, I can help give back. You don't have to live by the water now to be able to say, look what I'm doing to be a good steward. Look what I'm doing to help these communities that have been devastated, whether it's through Deepwater Horizon or whether it was through over harvesting on the Chesapeake Bay with the development that's also going on. That is an important message to our community now, because now you can say, oh, we can be environmental. We can actually help the children understand that they can go out and make money. It's good to make money. It's okay. And we're doing something great for the Bay.
Toler Noley, founder of the Oyster Company of Virginia. When we come back from a short break, we take a look at another successful oyster cultivation model that farmers are using in our own state. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from Cafe B, featuring contemporary Creole cuisine with an emphasis on fresh Gulf seafood served in a charming yet unpretentious old Metairie setting. Lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch, and private events on Metairie Road. Thanks to successful lobbying that eased regulations previously hampering innovations here in the state, the Louisiana shellfish business has evolved rapidly. One of the most exciting results has been the creation of the first Louisiana farm-raised oyster that lives its entire life in cages that never touch the muddy bottom. Now that we've learned what Toler Noley is doing up in the Chesapeake Bay, let's travel to Grand Isle and meet the Guerrero family of Caminata Bay Premium Oyster Company. Owner Marcos Guerrero and his son Boris welcomed us aboard their compact bay boat for a morning out on the water to learn the process of oyster farming, Louisiana style.
Okay, we're going to the farm, Caminata Bay Premium Oyster Farm. It's right there by Caminata Pass, next to, in front of the island, close to the bridge, actually. It's a plot, it's like a park that the Port Commission with Wildlife and Fisheries and all the legislation, legislator from Louisiana, make it happen, because it was no legislation before, so no one can have aquaculture in the state. This is the first time the law passed, I think, in 2012. So in 2013, we started doing the process, the paperwork, and then actually in 2013, would approve and start doing the infrastructure anchor, did the anchors on this on the bottom of the sea, put the submarine lines and all the infrastructure that we need in order to grow these oysters.
Tell me a little bit about the seeding process that, you take part in.
Okay, we buy the seed from the hatchery and then we put it in a nursery on land, in a nursery on land. After they reach 4 millimeter, we start putting in the field. And from that time, it takes about 10 months probably to be market size.
Only 10 months, and that's remarkable because your average oyster in the wild, in the normal way that oysters grow, how long do they usually take before they are ready for harvest?
They said about 2 to 3 years to be ready. And the beauty of this one is that the place where we are gave this unique flavor to these kind of oysters. The bay is so rich in flavors, wild. Once you feel the oyster, you can taste like the wild flower oyster, herbs inside, the sea salty, the texture is great what happens over there at the bay.
They're also so beautiful. Can you explain to me why the oysters that you are growing have deep cups and flat tops, different from a typical Louisiana oyster?
Yes, those oysters are, the lab select the best of the male and females, and then we have a special type of oysters. Those oysters don't spawn, that's another good thing. So that means through the summertime, when usually wild oysters are spawning, our oyster doesn't spawn. And being on the first 12 inches of the surface, that's where the most of the nutrients of the sea are. So they grow faster that way. They grow in cages. The cages protect them from predators, so we don't have to worry about that. They don't have to worry about predators. Now, in order to get this nice shape, like you said, we have to flip the cages once a week. So that's a lot of hard work and take a lot of time because we have to wait until for a nice day, a day that is not raining or it's not too many waves, in order to flip the cages. They call this drying position. It's in a drying, so the oysters get dry. So it prevents to biofouling to form and also incrustation on the shell. It prevents, so that's why you see the oyster coming later on so clean. And its shape too, its shape. Every time we tumble the oyster, it makes them form this cup at the bottom. So you can compare the same size, the wild oyster and our oysters, and it's gonna be holding more meat. So even if the same size, we have more meat, it's more weight also on the oyster.
As the boat slowed down, and we began our approach to their underwater farm, I noticed several black devices about 2 feet in diameter floating on the clear water.
We can go pick one up.
Okay.
Which one are you gonna take? Second.
All right.
Stopping the boat, Boris and his father each grabbed one end of the device, pulling a heavy wire cage onto our boat, packed with growing baby oysters.
So this is a cage, the floating devices. So what we do is, before the beginning, we were doing the same as you saw, but later on we put the pulley and we kind of the hydraulic system that help us move the cage here on top and then release it on the other side. So it comes this way, we take the bags, take whatever we need to do, seed.
So you can see, we put the seed this.
Oh, yes, there's the little babies.
Yeah, these are from, they spawned in July. So yeah, there are little babies there for next season.
The hatchery produced, it's a mix, if you put it that way, between a diploid oyster and tetraploid. Once they mix the two, it comes a triploid. It's the same as the other oyster. The only thing is they don't spawn. It's like a seedless watermelon, the same nice watermelon but without the seed. That's the only difference. And that allowed us to sell it whole year round, especially in summertime. Do we call it the summer crop? Because
yeah,
we can harvest. during the summer without any problem.
And not only that, they spend all their energy growing instead of also, you know, spawning.
Yeah, instead of spawning. Yeah.
So like the meat, it stays meatier for that case, because all they do is grow and eat. So yeah, this will be for next season. The other ones are kind of heavy. We'll have to use the whole thing to bake them up.
Cool.
Yeah. That's what we see in Florida, deeper than these are.
Yeah, oh yeah, so that's the difference also. Mm. So the ones that are deeper is where
ready to
the
harvest. They're ready to harvest.
Oh, so that's ones. How you even can tell some sort of great memory or complicated map,
right,
huh?
Exactly.
Too, but sometimes here we have to just come over what we see. Okay, we remember.
Yeah.
Kind of we're every day here almost.
We start usually from this side to that side. We start harvesting. Yeah.
So we had an order.
What has the reaction been from the chefs in the city to your oysters? Tell me about how your business is going as far as from farm to table.
It's very positive. I mean, the chefs have been loving this oyster, especially because also we give them to them clean. So not only the flavor, just started with the cleanliness. They don't have to like have another sink to clean them or put somebody else. But the flavor, I mean, they love it. Every time somebody tastes it, we just get tons of positive feedback of how good it tastes. And, you know, they basically tell us it's almost like tasting the sea, you know?
What dawned on me the first time I tasted one and understood what you all were doing out here is that this is the first time we've ever had a Louisiana oyster that didn't grow in the mud.
That's correct. So they love it. I mean,
The currents. You see the currents?
That's another thing. We have plenty of wind, plenty of currents, and most of the waves are on top. So every time it passes one, it keeps them kind of clean. You know, not fully clean, but it helps. Every little helps.
So each cage grows about 700. Is that what's the yield out of each cage?
Yeah, we have it right now. We're trying the amount that we can put in it, but we know that, for example, in other parts of Canada, they grow up to 1,000 each cage. So we are kind of pushing a little bit, seeing, understanding also how it reacts, what happens here. So we put just 700. We have some of 800, we have some of 900 too. We never put 1,000, but we are trying and see what's the best amount that it can hold.
Well, you all are brave pioneers, that's the truth.
Thank you very much. Yes, we're here. Every day thinking and so many nights without sleeping, just thinking on what we have here. It's not too easy, but we got a great product. We got a great response. That makes us move forward, really. People like you coming here and having this talk here, that's fantastic.
Marcos and Boris Guerrero of Caminata Bay Premium Oysters. It's not every day that hard-working oyster shuckers get the limelight, but every year during the New Orleans Oyster Festival, shuckers become celebrities as they compete for the title of Best Oyster Shucker. This year, the Desire Oyster Bar hosted the preliminary trials of the Oyster Shucking Competition. Intrepid oyster shuckers from across Louisiana, and even a couple from Florida and Virginia, flocked to the French Quarter for a chance at the title. Amid the clamor and the clangor of oyster shells hitting trays, and fans cheering on, producer Sarah Holtz gathered the sounds of the competition and sent us this postcard.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the 2016 New Orleans Oyster Festival P&J Oyster Company Oyster Shucking Preliminary Competition.
Hello, my name is Timbo Joseph. I am an oyster shucker at Grand Isle Restaurant. About 2 years now, so I'm a rookie, sort of new to it. This is actually my first contest, so.
How are you feeling?
A little nervous, no pressure. I'm excited, you know, test my skill against other fellow oystermen, so I'm looking forward to it.
My name is Honor Allen. I'll be representing the Hunt's Oyster Bar at Panama City, Florida. And pretty much shucking oysters up there at the bar. I've heard a lot of talk about, you know, some of the best oyster shuckers being over here in Louisiana, and I'd really like to push myself to be around the best. So here I am. I've competed four or five times now. It's a lot of fun. That's one of the biggest adrenaline rushes you can have.
Paul from Red Fish Grill. I've been with the company 17 years, so.
This lady here just flew in from Virginia. Her name is the Black Pearl. Oh, yeah.
My name is Deborah Pratt from Virginia. I represent Havana in Jamaica, Virginia. As I turned around and looked, I have a lot of young men to go again. So I got to do my best to try to beat them. I feel really good. I'm great because I enjoy competing against all men. So that's my goal, is to pick them out and go ahead and rock the boat.
My name's Haley. I'm a sous chef over at Kingfish on Conti and Charters. And I used to formerly opened up Pesh. I helped work there. And so that's kind of where I got good at shucking Louisiana oysters. Previously, I was at in Seattle at a few different places, and actually even shucking a little bit in Minneapolis. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to see how I fare against the Louisiana gentlemen, because they're kind of the best in the world. So. You know what? Working in New Orleans, you kind of get used to being surrounded by that many men, so I don't let it bother me that much. If I let men intimidate me, I'd spend my entire kitchen career in a corner somewhere, and I don't want to live like that. So I just pull my pants up and get it done the same way they do.
All right, are we ready? On your marks. Get set, go. All right, we got 2 minutes here. These guys are shucking not only for speed, but also for precision. Unbelievable, nice and plump. And whoever said that oysters aren't good in the summertime?
Talk to me, Buck.
Five different sauces.
I'm coming to represent my coworker, Julia, right there. The little cat right there. He the best in the world. Watch him. Watch his footwork right there. Watch him hand work. Yeah, that's what I'm waiting on right there. We got to win this thing.
It's a place called Oysters. Four life. Other team, we got Deborah Pratt. All the way from Virginia. She's also known as the Black Pearl.
And I'm going to try to knock these oysters out, let these guys know how this thing is really done. I'm going to drop them like it's hot. Bang!
I believe it's on. All right, good, what do we got? 3, 2, 1, hands up. All right, big round of applause for round 2. Very nice. And our number one, with 20 oysters, the only one to hit 20, from Hunt's Oyster Bar in Florida, Honor Allen. Let's have a big round of applause.
It went well. I got 12, but I didn't get five of them quite completely detached from the shell, so I only ended up with 7 usable ones. But no, it was so much fun. It was a lot of adrenaline, and I love the environment, and it was real nice to shuck with Miss Pearl from Virginia. Got 2 ladies killing it.
It was very, very fun, man. I got a chance to compete with a lot of oyster veterans. I beat a couple of them, so I feel good. Can't complain. Thank you.
The Oyster Shucking Contest at the 2016 New Orleans Oyster Festival.
How to pick a winner? Won't somebody tell me? Do you go by the size, the weight, the looks, or the personality?
This year's Oyster Shucking Contest spotlighted some of the most impressive competitors from around the nation, but it was ultimately a New Orleans local who won the day. Shortly after the event, we met up with reigning champion Jay Gallette at the Oyster Bar of Superior Seafood to learn just what it takes to become the best oyster shucker in the country.
My name is Jay Gallette. I currently work at Superior Seafood Oyster Bar on the corner of St. Charles and Napoleon. I am the 2016 P&J Oyster Shucking Champion. This year was actually my first competition this year. I've wanted to in the past, I just never got around to it, and this year I went ahead and done it.
Well, it was pretty amazing. For the first time this year, there was a competition from other states even. So, and you were going up against some pretty hefty oyster shuckers, longevity in the business, some of those guys.
That's right. I mean, For the most part, there was a little pride involved. I mean, there were some people from, I think, Virginia, Florida. The guy from Florida was supposedly the Florida state champion. So it was a little nerve-wracking, but I knew that if I just did what I do and held it down for New Orleans, I could win first place.
How long have you been shucking oysters?
This year will make exactly 10 years I've been shucking. Before that, I was involved in the oyster business, catching them. My family owned the oyster business when I was a little boy. And when I got older, 18, I went and started on the oyster shucking bars.
So you get oysters in your blood.
Correct. My whole life.
Well, give us a once-over of your technique. Walk us through how you shuck an oyster.
Well, how I shuck it, and there's several ways to shuck it, is the back hinge method. You put the top bottom, which is the bowl side down, and the plate side up. And what you want to do is you want to go in the back hinge at about a 45-degree angle and find a little sweet spot. And you wiggle your knife until you get your knife in there. You can pick it up. You should be able to pick your knife up, and the oyster's still hanging on the knife. All you do is you give it a little wiggle, pop. You turn your knife side. I turn my knife sideways. Hold the back hinge open with the thumb. I slide my knife forward to the abductor muscle, scraping along the top shell, releasing the abductor muscle, and I just go along the bowl side under the abductor muscle and release that part of the meat. Now you have a nice, clean, cold oyster you can slide right off into your mouth.
That's absolutely perfect. And having been one of the judges in the preliminary contest, I know that that part of the detachment of the oyster from the shell is what really was an issue for some of the other shuckers.
Yeah, it was actually a big issue for me because in the preliminary rounds, my nerves got overworked. In the first few I shucked, I was a little shaky. And the first three I shucked, I actually didn't cut the eye completely. And then after that, I realized, okay, I know I can make it as long as I keep all these eyes cut. I didn't want all my oysters flipped over knowing I had it what it took to make the competition. So I went ahead and finished off cutting all the eyes complete, and I wound up getting 16 oysters for the preliminary round and shucking 19 in the final competition.
So tell me, what was it like the moment that you realized you'd won? And how many did you win by? What was the next number?
The next number, I shucked 19 for 19, so none of my oysters got turned over. I cut 19 bivalve, perfectly shucked oysters. I think second place was 16 oysters. The moment I realized, when I actually counted the guy from Florida, he had 19 too, but he didn't cut them completely. So once I knew I had a chance of winning. It was a lot of nerves going on. I was really overwhelmed, to be honest with you. I actually felt like crying for the most part.
Who was there to support you?
I had a few of my customers there. I actually had some people from out of state that my wife met, who she convinced to vote for me. My wife was there. My little son boy was there. So I had a little group, cheering me on.
What was the reaction of the crew here at Superior Seafood when you brought home the first place prize?
Well, that was the thing. Before I went over the days leading up to it, everyone was, you're going to win, man. You know, they were really, really pushing for me to win. So it was a lot of pressure. I knew I could win. It's just I had to do my thing. In the preliminary rounds, I overthought it too much and tried to go too fast. And then I realized, okay, I looked at my mistakes and realized I didn't need to do that. I just need to do what I do every day, and it wound up working out for me.
What about equipment? Do you favor one type of oyster knife over another?
Well, I actually make my own knives, wooden handle knives. It's good to have three or four different types of knives. You want to have, because there's different types of oysters, right? So you want to have a skinny knife for smaller, flat oysters. You want to have a thicker blade for bigger oysters, and it's all a preference thing, but you try different knives and see which one cuts the cleanest oyster for you. That's what I would recommend.
So Jay, do you eat oysters every single day?
I try them when we get a new batch in, just to make sure the meat's there, the taste is there, the sweetness, the saltiness. That way I can be honest with my customers when they come in. Because during the summertime, a lot of people are a little skeptical about eating oysters because they believe an old myth that the oysters aren't as good in the summertime, and that's just not true. So I make sure I tell the truth. That way if I tell them they are salty and they try them and they're salty, they know they can believe me. They can trust the oyster shucker because somebody's going to say, they're salty even if they don't try them, and the customer's going to find out and they're going to stop coming to the oyster bar. So honesty is the best thing. Because you can mask the saltiness with cocktail and horseradish and everything. You know, you can deal with the taste. So as long as you're honest, the customers will respect that and they'll keep coming back. So that's what I do. I'm just honest with the customers.
on a really busy day, Jay, like, I mean, maybe Mardi Gras parades are going by or something like that, how many oysters do you shuck when you're really busy?
When I'm really busy, speaking of Mardi Gras and things, I'll shuck about 30 to 35 sacks, 100 count in each sack. So it's about 3,000 to 3,500 oysters every day for a busy season.
I'd say you sure get enough practice then.
It's a lot of oysters. It's tough work. You just got to be consistent and keep on going.
Well, I just want to say big congratulations on your amazing win, and here's to next year.
Yeah, I hope to be there, Lord willing. I'll be there next year in 2017.
Jay Gillette, the 2016 P&J Oyster Shucking Competition Champion. What is the best way to fry an oyster? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and by French Market Coffee. Every premium blend of French Market Coffee contains a richness that can only be called New Orleans bold. Made from the finest beans, slow roasted in small batches, only one coffee captures the bold flavor of our one-of-a-kind city. French Market Coffee, New Orleans bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What is the best way to fry an oyster? Nothing could be simpler. Drain the oysters, and don't forget to freeze that precious oyster liquor for use later in soups and sauces. Toss the oysters in Zatarain's seasoned fish fry, a mixture preferred even in Popeye's Louisiana kitchen. Carefully shake off the excess and let the oysters dry on a rack for a few minutes while you heat about an inch of vegetable oil in a skillet to 360 degrees. Drop the oysters into the hot oil and let them fry for about 4 minutes. As soon as they're looking lightly browned, remove them from the oil with a slotted spoon and drain them on the same rack you dried them on. If you sit them on paper towel to drain, they can get soggy. Serve those oysters hot within minutes of removing them from the oil. I'm Poppy Tooker, and crispy fried Gulf oysters are real Louisiana eats. Now that you've got those perfectly fried crispy oysters ready to eat, what are you going to serve with them? Lots of people like their oysters with cocktail sauce, but I'm a tartar sauce kind of girl. Homemade tartar sauce is so much better than anything you're going to buy off of a grocery shelf, and it's so quick and easy to make. Of course, you could start with freshly made mayonnaise, but your favorite brand from the jar will do just fine. Spoon about a cup of mayonnaise into a mixing bowl. Whisk in the juice of one fresh lemon and a couple of dashes of your favorite hot sauce. Add a tablespoon of coarsely chopped capers, 3 or 4 finely diced dill gherkins. Gherkins are tiny dill pickles that are always very crisp, adding texture to your tartar sauce. And add 1 finely chopped green onion. I use the green part only in my tartar sauce because I don't want the onion flavor overpowering it. Then, refrigerate the tartar sauce until your fried oysters are ready to serve. Fresh tartar sauce will stay fresh in the fridge for about 5 days, And boy, is it good. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats.
Good afternoon, Poppy. This is Deborah Pratt from Virginia. I am the famous and the best oyster shucker that walks around this nation. I thank God for every step that I made.
Emerging from humble beginnings on the banks of the Rappahannock River in the rural community of Waterview, Virginia, Deborah Pratt has built a reputation nationally and internationally as one of the best oyster shuckers in the world. While she was in town to compete in the 2016 P&J Oyster Shucking Competition, we had a chance to speak with the dynamo who calls herself the Black Pearl and learn what oyster shucking has done for her.
As they would call me the Black Pearl, I would tell you that it was given to me by one of my favorite guys, Tola Nala.
Well, how did you begin shucking oysters? What's your oyster shucking story?
To begin to shuck oysters, I started shucking oysters in 1975. I had a younger sister that started shucking oysters before I did, and she started on the back of a doorstep. And she taught me how to open these oysters. You boil them home. This is how you do it. And I kept saying, no, I don't want to do this. So I began to work, got up one morning, went to this oyster house. They held 75 people. We stand up all day long. I began to shuck oyster there, and I was making, my first day I made $1.25, and this is piecework, the worst thing I ever could dream of. So it took me all day to make that $1.25. So these days continue to go on. I made $5 one week. And then I never gave up. I went back. Every day I would go. And I finally got to where I made $25 a week. And then one day, this guy that was working beside me, he said, Deborah, I think you should get in the competition and go to Merlin. You can beat the Merlin women. And I said, no, I can't do that. I don't think so. So he said, I'll get you a glove and I'll sharpen your knife. I thought about it, you know. So my sister and I, we took our kids to the soccer field and said, can y'all watch our kids till we get back? And we ran over to a banner to where they was having an oyster contest. I entered my first time. And knowing that was 1983, I won. And if you win the state, you'll enter into the international, which is St. Mary's County. So in October of that year, we went to Maryland, so I got into the competition, and I came first. Okay, that's all right. But in order to be where I'm at today, you must be the man. And it took me 10 years to be number one. When I'm saying 10 years, I've been going to Maryland for that 10 years. In that 10 years time, you have to shuck oysters as fast as you can, as pretty as you can. And the thing about me is learning how to shuck. And the thing about that is presentations mean a whole lot. So all you know, you work on your skills, you study the oysters. And in 1993, I finally won to go to England. Which is England, it's in Galway Island, is where the world is held. So my first year there, I came third. And then I came back and I went back. I went in 93, 94, and 95. In 95, I came second. In 97, I came second. So they considered me the fastest woman because no woman had gone into England and won a competition. So I said, oh, well, I did well. And from this day forward, I've been traveling. I've been going to different places like Boston, New York. I've been to Florida. Then here I am in New Orleans. You know, you saw who I was yesterday. I was one of the women who like to talk trash to the guys. The guys are my favorite people, and they are number one in my life because I run with the men's. Only time I might meet one lady, like yesterday was the first time I met this young lady here in New Orleans. I met one in Connecticut. You don't see many women's competing out there. So it makes it kind of tough. So I say I run with the men's, and I run with the best. And I'm not going to tell anybody. I never come last. I'm going to either be first, second, I'm going to be in between you. But I never let you intimidate me shucking oysters. And yesterday was a fun thing. Louisiana oysters are much tougher to get into. One reason I can tell you why they are hard for me, because the water is warm here. Now, if you had sent them oysters to Virginia, I guarantee you I would have gotten in. Because the oysters used to be colder there. Because they set up in the freezer. And I have shuck oysters from Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, and Virginia and Maryland. These are the states I have shuck every oyster that is. So I really enjoy shucking. I really enjoy and want to teach people how to open oysters. And as you notice that I don't come from the hinge. I think I better go to the hinge because them guys be popping. But you know, I have had a lot of fun. And my dream is to continue to shuck oysters. And I'm teaching other people how to open my way. And they find out, oh, that's a good way. Because the oyster look better, very clean. And that's one of my goals, is teach people not to go from the hands, to come from the lip of the oysters and have a better knife. Because like they said, we have a lot of farm-raised oysters are being produced in the States and sent around the world now. And people cannot use those big knives to get in. They have been sending them back to the company and said, we can't open these oysters. So they use me to show you how to get in.
Well, I'm fascinated, for one thing, because obviously your whole career has been spent shucking in commercial oyster houses. And down here, when people think of oyster shuckers, it's the oyster houses and the shuckers who work there are really almost invisible people. But we have a big visibility of oyster shuckers at oyster bars all across the South, everywhere. So have you ever ventured into the oyster bar situation?
I had never been in an oyster bar, and you have a true fact about that. And I'm trying to teach young people that's in college. That's a job for everybody. If you can learn how to open oysters, you can go into any bar around here to open oysters. And they look at me like, I say, sure, if you learn. That's a quick dollar for the weekend. And I said, no one's have to be behind you. All you got to do is go in a bar. I said, not to go to drink now, go to shuck.
Well, I am so honored to meet you. And it was really a treat to have the Black Pearl come visit us here in Louisiana.
Yes, I enjoy shucking oysters. But the last motto, I must tell you, I do not eat oysters.
You don't eat oysters.
I do not.
I've heard everything now.
I do not eat oysters.
You just don't like the way they taste?
Just don't like them at all.
Well, you are really somebody to know. And I am so tickled to have met you.
Thank you so much.
And let's stay in touch. Congratulations.
We will do that.
On to your next big victory.
I will return here. I'm coming back.
Okay.
I shall return.
We'll see you when you return.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah.
Nice to meet you, Poppy.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week as Nathaniel Zimmet butchers a whole hog at his restaurant, Boucherie.
I have a problem when I am describing to someone where a cut of an animal comes from, because I always use my body. And I'm like, so this is where the tenderloin is, and this is the loin, And I really am trying to stop myself from doing that right now.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, by Dickie Brennan's Bourbon House, from oysters to redfish, serving fresh Gulf seafood on Bourbon Street. Also home to the city's largest American whiskey and bourbon collection. And by Toujek's Restaurant, home of America's oldest stand-up bar, now celebrating 160 years on Decatur Street. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.